This program is sponsored by Walter Anderson Nursery.
If you have a green thumb or have always wanted one, then get ready for Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery, hosted by Ken Anderson, along with David Ross, Mark Mahady, and George Allman. Garden Talk aims to introduce new ideas, help solve problems, and keep you up to date on the latest developments in the nursery and landscaping industry. Call in now with your gardening questions. 888-344-1170. That's 888-344-1170. Now, here are your Garden Talk hosts, Ken, David, Mark, and George.
Good morning, San Diego. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I am Ken Anderson along with David Ross, Mark Mahady, and George Allman. We're going to be here for the next hour talking about all kinds of stuff going on in your yard. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Morning.
A little overcast this morning.
I didn't even look. You know, I walked out of the garage, got in my car. I didn't even look up. So I couldn't tell you if it was overcast in my neighborhood or not.
That's why I'm here.
Okay.
It was overcast.
It was a nice day, I mean, or a nice early morning. But
yes.
I parked my truck further out, so I was focusing on the ground, making sure I didn't find any snakes on my way to the truck.
And it's a pretty big step up.
Are they? Well, it's warm. There's warm pavement, and so I always am leery because you'll find them out there sometimes. Yeah.
Do you take a little ladder out there to help you get up into that thing, or how do you do
that?
That's
pretty funny, actually.
Sorry.
Ropes.
I'm a good rock climber, so.
We're supposed to have a nice weekend. A little bit cooler, and then get hot, and then maybe cool off for Labor Day.
Yeah.
Maybe.
So it'll cool off this weekend, and then we go to Las Vegas where it's going to be hot.
Yeah, hot.
And no thunderstorms. I'm a little bitter about that.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Oh, we haven't had any in all the years that we've been going up there.
I know, but we were so... This is the closest we've ever been to not having them.
Do you have any the next several weeks rain forecast?
Yeah,
for us?
I think 10 inches of rain is coming.
That's in November. What about the next couple of weeks?
Is that across the entire state like the one guy is predicting?
Exactly.
No, I'm sorry. I could not find. I looked. I read. Well, I pretended to read. I looked at pictures, and I couldn't find anything that said anything about that storm. I don't know.
But on a serious note, any rain? Anything coming?
No, but the monsoonal moisture is supposed to come back a little bit, but I don't think it's supposed to be as strong. So, quién sabe. However, September is this week, right? Next week?
Next week.
Yeah. It arrives, and so a fall storm will come, I promise.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you know what? I'm going to go out on a limb, and I'm going to predict from our first fall storm that we will get less than 10 inches of rain.
Ooh. Wow.
I'm pretty sure.
You think you're going to put money on that?
I will. Yeah. If anybody will bet me, I will put money on it.
Good luck with that.
But actually, just real quickly, that brings us to when that cooler rain comes, not the monsoonal moisture, it would be a good time to put out wildflowers, start a maybe lawn. Anyway, that's the transition. And maybe you're a pre-emergent weed killer, but that would probably be somewhere.
Throw some grow power out before?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Let's see. We do have classes this weekend in San Diego. It's going to be Fall Vegetables with Josh. And in Poway, it's going to be Vegetable Seed Saving with Adams. And he is going to – a couple of the things that he's going to go over are why should you save seeds, which seeds should be saved, flowers and pollination, preventing undesired cross-pollination, inbreeding depression. Well, that explains a lot. seed processing techniques, labeling, seed storage, and crop specifics. So this is going to be
seed storage and Psych 101.
So the most interesting thing I think he's going to cover for folks is how do you get seeds from a seedless watermelon, or how do you grow?
Yeah,
so that's going to be covered today. So if you're interested in that, pop in at Poway at 9:30.
That would be an interesting topic. Let's see.
I'm kind of interested in how we avoid undesirable cross-pollination.
Timing.
Is that it?
A lot of it is timing.
Is it?
Yeah. Oh, so you just spoiled it for everybody? Now they don't have to go?
No, there's more to it.
Oh.
Next weekend is Labor Day weekend. There are going to be no classes in the stores, but both stores will be open Saturday, Sunday, and Monday for the Labor Day weekend. So if you want to get out and do something in your yard, although it's supposed to be getting hot again, I think.
Labor Day, they're suggesting. They're not even sure a week out. I know. It's supposed to cool down next weekend. Not be cold, but
no,
they're...
Right.
Just not cool. Be more overcast and a little bit cooler for next weekend. You know, your cup on it totally... Those are the Padres' new uniform colors, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm not wild about it.
Yeah, the Friday night when they do wear them, the City Light, Connect. City Connect or whatever on Friday night.
It's a City Connect cup. It's very nice. Kind
of. Let's see. Oh. So classes resume again on September 10th, and it's going to be attracting pollinators with Ryan in San Diego at 9 o'clock. And in Poway, it's going to be design of a functional food forest with Tyler Trimble, which Tyler does do it. He's from...
Backyard fruit, San Diego.
He does do a good class. Really, really knowledgeable guy.
And he does one on functional food forests. Working on one on non-functional food forests where we're working on that for the future.
You don't even have to work that hard on this.
Yeah. I
was going to inject something, though, because you were talking about temperatures. And last week on the air, you guys mentioned something. You said the Baker thermometer, right?
Yeah.
I had to look that up.
We got called out.
I have no idea what that was. And when I got home, Capri's like, what's the Baker thermometer? Because neither one of us know that. So it's not as well known.
It's a cute little baking thermometer. It's one that works in the oven.
Was it Baker?
Yeah, it is Baker. Well, you're absolutely right on. I just didn't know anybody didn't know that.
Apparently, two of us at least, and I would go out on my limb and bet that there were probably other folks out there that had no idea what that was.
At one time, I believe it was the world's largest thermometer.
I think so. Yeah.
So what is this thermometer? I mean, I looked it up, but what is this from you guys that just threw it out there?
It's a big, tall thermometer they stuck in the middle of Baker to get people to pull off the freeway on their way to Vegas.
Okay. Originally installed at the Bun Boy in Baker, which is sadly no longer there.
It's very sad.
It's something. I think it's a Greek restaurant now.
I think it is too. Yeah.
I need to update my references because the last time I was in Vegas was 1979. So I think
it wasn't there a little bit. Yeah, it wasn't there. I guarantee it.
But you would have seen it had it been there.
And for those of you that are unaware of the Baker thermometer or are not aware of where Baker is, it is on the 15 north to Las Vegas. North of Barstow, not too far. Well, it's a little ways from the state line still.
I would submit to you it's on the 15 south as well.
Correct.
Well, I guess it depends on which direction you're pointing. Yeah.
Now, it's there partially because it's the gateway to Death Valley, correct?
I believe
so. Isn't that what the triggering event was, the hottest temperature in Death Valley?
Yeah, they set a record or something like that. So it was, 88?
Somewhere around there.
Like I had mentioned last week, the fun fact about that was a couple days before the dedication, it blew over. So they had to put it back together.
Which is why we need engineering students.
If you're driving on the 15 to Las Vegas or from Las Vegas as you're going through Baker, it is hard to miss, especially at night because it lights up. So you can see it at night as well.
Do they turn it off to save electricity during
power shortages? It's probably plugged directly into the Ivanpah power plant, which is shortly up the road from there.
Okay.
the giant bird cooker that they
exactly
have in the desert.
No kidding.
Let's see.
Try doing that in your backyard legally. Okay, sorry.
Moving on. Not a whole lot going on in Balboa Park. However, the San Diego Iris Society is having their rhizome sale today and tomorrow at the Casa del Prado in Balboa Park. And they're going to be doing bearded iris, Louisiana iris, and a couple other ones I can't think of off the top of my head. And, you know, speaking of Louisiana iris, I haven't seen a Louisiana iris.
Since Dan Carlin.
Didn't we have one in our pond?
We do get them. But they're usually not blooming. We had some blooming. We used to get them in
15-gallon
jars. And they were enormous.
They were noteworthy.
Yes, they were.
They were beautiful.
Tall bearded irises, reblooming Arab bred, and Louisiana irises. That's what they have. And then they're going to take a week off for Labor Day, which I'm guessing is why, because we're going to be dark next week class-wise. And then you can come back on the 10th and 11th and
pick up more rhizomes.
Get more rhizomes.
See, I would have to do that because I would leave mine out and they would die.
Not that quickly.
Turn to dust, yes.
Bearded iris rhizomes will last quite a while.
They do last quite a while.
Yeah, they do.
And they will grow from looking like nothing.
It's the truth.
When do they bloom? Bearded irises. When do they typically bloom?
They usually do a spring bloom, and then some are reblooming varieties.
Brooke has some right now that are blooming, and she's ecstatic. One of our coworkers in Poway, she's
very happy sometimes.
Right. Yeah.
Speaking of which, we did not get our rhizomes in yet.
No, we did not. And I talked to Kathleen yesterday. They still had not arrived, so I don't know what happened. I called the grower 2 days ago and left a message, but did not hear back. They were supposed to ship
on the 22nd.
Yeah, this week.
And
they were shipping to San Diego because they were going to take the bulk of them, but she hadn't seen them yet.
Hmm. Interesting. So for those of you that are waiting, the bearded iris rhizomes will be in the store shortly.
Hopefully. Shortly, yeah.
So we shall see. What else do we want to talk about?
Weather classes. Go ahead.
I was going to say we do still have milkweed in stock. We have a fair amount of native milkweed. There's a little bit of tropical milkweed out there still. We have not heard anything from the Ag Department yet about a ban on tropical milkweed. We've been in contact with them, but nothing has come down, so we shall see what happens.
What's the genesis behind that? I mean, of people saying that it's going to be banned. Who is saying that?
The Ag Department.
Okay.
Yeah, they said they are looking at banning it, but they have not yet done it. They will notify everybody when that comes down. It's based on
state guidance.
State guidance is what it was.
And it's not going to be an immediate ban. They're going to let people know they have a certain amount of time to sell what they have and move it through before they arbitrarily shut it down.
Yeah. So we shall see. If you want to give us a call today, 888-344-1170 is the number. It's only been a couple of years.
I hear you. So,
you're listening to Garden Talk here on KPRZ and KCBQ. We will be back with more right after this.
Get your gardening questions answered by calling 888-344-1170. That's 888-344-1170. There is more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Got a gardening question? Call 888-344-1170. 888-344-1170. Now, here's your hosts, Ken Anderson, David Ross, Mark Mahady, and George Allman.
And we're back with more Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with David Ross, Mark Mahady, and George Allman, talking to you about all kinds of stuff going on in your yard and garden. There's a new quarantine up in
Valley Center that encompasses 77 square miles between Pama Valley, Lake Wolford, Moosa Canyon, the Rincon Reservation, and is going to remain in effect until June of 2023.
Now, what do they do?
Hang on. What are we quarantining?
What are they quarantining?
Fruit. A bunch of different varieties
because
there's a Mexican fruit fly infestation they found on a tree or up in that area. And
it was in an orange tree.
The Mexican fruit flies are, I guess they're the lesser known cousin of the med fly. We always worry about med flies, I think. But the Mexican fruit flies get into a ton of fruits, too, and destroy them.
50 different types of produce that they can be problematic on, including avocados, citrus, apples, peaches, pomegranates, and other tropical fruits. So
if those areas are under quarantine, what happens to any crops that are being grown in there?
They're not allowed to leave the quarantine area, I think, unless they are processed. And so they're primarily, I think, wanting to keep people from moving backyard fruit around and right. taking it and sharing it.
That would make sense. That's an
easy
problem.
Vector to
commercially, spread. It's going to impact 160 different fruit growers up there and 80 nurseries, 10 packing houses. So it's a big impact.
Yeah, it is.
It may be subject to the restrictions as well.
It says within the quarantine area, they estimate about $49 million worth of crops are grown. And so they are quarantining $49 million worth of crops to protect $300+ million worth of crops in the county that are susceptible to the max fly.
Interesting.
And they're releasing sterile fruit flies. And they also...
250,000 sterile male fruit flies.
Yeah. Per day, per week?
It's per square mile.
Okay. Most,
they're just per square mile is what they said.
And then there, it also says they're releasing a bait with some kind of a natural occurring bacterium that'll kill the flies. I don't know what that would be. It doesn't say, but usually they get them under control pretty quickly. I'm surprised the quarantine lasts that long, but maybe they're afraid of dormant eggs or something overwintering.
Yeah. Trying to break the life cycle of them or something. And that's interesting.
We have had a quarantine in 2017 for a fruit fly, and then the last one was in 2003. So they've been effective, I guess, in preventing outbreaks.
They keep track of it and get it under control very quickly, and for good reason.
Wasn't it the MedFly where they were just spraying
MedFly
and all of San Diego and LA County at night?
I remember it being a big deal in El Cajon when I was in, I think, high school.
I was going to say it was years and years ago,
They were spraying Malathion, right. And then somebody drank some Malathion to prove it was, not that bad.
If you think about it.
Uh-oh. I try not to, but go ahead.
I've said this before.
Parts per million.
The poison. Yeah. Right?
The LD50 on Malathion is like 1500 or something like that. I mean, it's a lot. And what you buy in the store is 50% Malathion.
Right.
And then you dilute the 50% Malathion down to 1 to 2 teaspoons per gallon. I mean, by the time you dilute it out, it's for a human being, it's a very, very, for something the size of a fruit fly, absolutely deadly. But for a human being, I'm not advocating going out and drinking Malathion or anything like that.
Because it smells, right?
But it does. It has that nice organophosphate smell to it.
Yes.
And just so that next week George doesn't come back and admonish us, should we talk about LD50 for just a quick second?
Just about to ask that. Okay. So, go ahead.
It is the amount of a product required to be a lethal dose to 50% of the population.
Yes. Typically of rats.
And they rate all of the different pesticides, insecticides, I'm sure all sorts of other things, by the amount, the LD50 of a product. And the most toxic thing that I ever remember coming across at Walter Anderson Nursery was the safe and natural, not safe, the natural product for controlling insects on poultry and other things.
Nicotine sulfate. Yeah, that actually used to be approved. I believe it was approved at one time for organic gardening.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. It was natural.
Yeah,
and organic.
Oh, and it was incredibly deadly.
Yes,
I think that was one. There's three different warnings that are on pesticide labels. There's warning, danger,
caution, warning, danger, poison.
Okay, four. And poison is by far the worst. I think there was only two things that we ever had in the store that had poison labels on them. It was nicotine sulfate and probably Chlordane.
Strychnine.
I'm pretty sure strychnine.
We don't have strychnine anymore.
Right.
No.
We did. We did.
In the baits. Gopher baits and things.
Yeah. But yeah, that stuff is bad news.
If I had known it was going to disappear and how toxic it was at the time, I would have saved a bottle.
Just for fun?
Yes. Look, I have nicotine sulfate.
Yeah, it was really bad.
I think it was in the single digits. The LD50 of nicotine sulfate was either single or double digits.
Single or low double digits.
Yeah. And the rest of them are up in the three or four digits. Yes.
Yeah. Crazy stuff.
Well, thank you for that. Because I know our listeners are curious when you say something like that.
You had an interesting post on the Wednesday Wisdom this week.
Yeah, it was, a wildlife pest identification tool.
Yeah.
UCIPM. We typically are always looking at, okay, why are you laughing at that one?
Well, I'm just thinking, I consider myself a wildlife pest identification tool.
You are definitely a tool. Definitely. Yeah.
Okay.
And a pest. So.
Yeah, there you go.
We often think of insects as being the culprit on a lot of our plants, as being the thing that's causing the most damage. But often it can be, obviously we talk about rats a lot, but other rodents, but deer and raccoons, et cetera, et cetera. So this particular tool, you can look at photographs of damage or tracks or droppings and then highlight those and then hit play, and it comes up and gives you some ideas of what animal might be the culprit.
Well, this week, didn't you have a customer that assured you that rats were not eating his kale?
Correct. And I showed
him. Because they don't eat kale,
they don't
correct?
Eat kale until I showed him the video from my night trail camera in my garden of rats
eating
devouring
kale.
And it wasn't one. It was a whole family that went out to dinner
right
in the kale bed. So,
and I don't normally consider quantity a bunch of rats getting in there and mowing something down. So if something was completely mowed down, I would expect it to be something larger, a rabbit or a deer.
Exactly.
Yep. In this particular, that particular video, I think there were four or five, but I've had another video in the same garden with eight rats eating kale, and they're all gone now. They had to leave.
The rats.
They had to leave.
They had to
what
leave.
Are the kale? I'm just...
So anyway, it's a great tool, and it's
fun. Snap traps or?
A combination of snap tracks and water bucket with perlite floating on the top. But if you're interested in that tool, it's in the UCIPM. You can get it on our Facebook page under Wednesday Wisdom.
Well, you had a problem. I think it was last summer with coyotes eating your persimmons.
Right. Persimmons and figs.
Yeah.
Right. So
and loquats.
Well, loquats. Yep. Correct. I have video of that as well. That's actually if you're interested in watching coyotes eat loquats on our Facebook page under videos for Walter Anderson Nursery, you'll see that, and it's interesting. But I just put a temporary fence around the persimmon tree, and that seems to keep them out. I mean, they obviously can jump pretty high, but they don't jump into an enclosed area. So by putting a small 4-foot fence around it, it keeps them out.
Well, that's good. So you might actually get some.
We might get some persimmons after they destroyed the tree in the process of ripping.
Yeah, broke the branches off.
A lot of branches. They're not very talented with their opposable thumbs of pulling the fruit off easily. They break the branches in the process.
You should show them how to twist.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't mind sharing two or three, but they took branches that had 30, 40 pieces of fruit on it and destroyed it.
So I want you to envision a howling coyote, its nose up in the air. So you could teach them to grab the fruit and then do a pirouette and
spin.
Then pull.
Twist.
And
okay. Spin move, yes.
Yeah.
And we'll put it on, what's the medium? TikTok? Is that what's the big...
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's
we'll do something like that and we'll be famous. We'll get a lot of likes.
Mm. There you go.
Or infamous, whichever the correct term
whichever
is.
That is. And
there have been other rat issues.
I was going to say, I have in my notes here to talk about rat issues that have been surfacing.
There have been rat issues in mid to north Poway and getting into basil and tomatoes and things. And we had a customer that went to Home Depot and bought aluminum flashing siding rolls and put a 2 or 3 foot barrier of aluminum all the way around.
Which worked for a short period of time.
2 days.
Right.
Is my understanding.
What happened after 2 days?
They figured out how to get into the garden bypassing the aluminum siding.
Well, it's speaking of aluminum siding over in Hawaii, in heavily traveled pedestrian areas. You see it a lot in Waikiki where they have coconut palms. Almost every palm tree has a sleeve of aluminum flashing around the trunk to keep the, because the rats will crawl up the trunk of the palm tree, start chewing on the coconuts, and then the coconuts fall down and hit people.
Yeah.
So that's,
well, that's what I'd like to see a TikTok video of.
Man, I would not want to get hit in the head with a full size coconut.
That
would hurt.
It really would.
If you live to feel it. So,
good point.
Yeah.
So snap traps and sticky traps.
Well, I think we've said this before though about rats. A lot of customers think that because they don't see the rats in the daytime, they don't have rats. I've talked to quite a number of folks who say, oh, this looks like rat damage. And they'll tell me, well, we don't have rats.
Yeah, that's true.
And I said, Oh, yeah, you do. Yeah, you do. You do.
You just don't know it.
You just don't know that you have rats. And they may not be living in your yard. They might be in your neighbor's house under the shed or their firewood pile, but there are rats coming in your yard at night.
We had an owl in the backyard the other night.
Oh, that'd be pretty cool.
I've seen him a few times. He must live somewhere, or it must live somewhere in close by the house. And it was up in the neighbor's palm tree. It was right on the edge of our property. It was up in the neighbor's palm tree. And then we went out and took a look at it. And then it took off and it swooped down. And shortly after the swoop, we heard some distressed screaming of some small animal. So I'm guessing it must have spotted a rat. Because you never see them in the daytime, but I know we have rats because I have half-eaten tomatoes stuff like that.
Yeah.
So they are out there.
We determined these rats to be southern rats. Correct, George?
We did, and I'm trying to think of why we said that now.
Really?
Yeah, I don't recall.
Because they were eating green tomatoes and not waiting for them to ripen.
That's right.
And I said, but they didn't cook them. And George said, no, they're storing away the green tomatoes in their little cheeks and going home and frying them up.
I see.
So they're southern rats. That's right. Now I recall that.
They're smarter rats, too, because they're avoiding the traps.
They're country boy rats.
Yeah.
And actually, you know what? Fried green tomatoes are not bad. Have you ever had them?
Anything fried.
Most things fried. Right, you take a coating that's really nicely seasoned and flavored and you fry it in oil. Oh, come on now.
Did you say a coating?
A coating.
Coating. Yeah. Okay, I thought you said codeine.
I was going to say coating.
Coating. If you have some codeine and a glass of wine and then fry up a tomato with a coating.
There you go. All right. If you want to give us a call, 888-344-1170 is the number. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. Bob, stay on the phone. We're going to talk to you as soon as we come back. We'll be back right after this.
Get your gardening questions answered by calling 888-344-1170. That's 888-344-1170. There is more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Got a gardening question? Call 888-344-1170. 888-344-1170. Now, here's your hosts, Ken Anderson, David Ross, Mark Mahady, and George Allman.
And we're back with more Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with David Ross, Mark Mahady, and George Allman. We're going to go to the phones. We're going to go talk to Bob down in Otay Mesa. Good morning, Bob. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine. I have two questions for you. At the beginning of the program, did you mention milkweed being quarantined? And if so, why? And the second question is, do you record the classes?
Second question, do we record the classes? No, we do not. We have been exploring doing that and putting them online, but as of yet, we have not done that. So, but keep track, and hopefully at some point in the future, we'll be able to do that. As far as the milkweed ban is concerned, there's two different camps as far as tropical milkweed is concerned. There are people that are afraid that tropical milkweed can lead to the decline of the monarch population, mostly because of a bacteria.
Protozoa. It's a disease called OE, which I forgot what it stands for.
Yeah, it winters over, because tropical milkweed doesn't necessarily go dormant like the native ones do. It allows the OE to build up, and it can in some situations cause problems. The way to get around that is in late October or November, just force it into dormancy, cut it back, and then that it doesn't allow the OE to winter over and build up in population. But I believe the tropical milkweed has been or is going to be deemed as a nuisance weed by the state of California, which is what's prompting some counties to ban the sale of it. Ventura County already has, but as far as I know, that's the only, I think that's the only one so far that has banned the sale of it. But the County of San Diego has been considering it. We're just waiting. We're like I had mentioned, we're in contact with them to find out what the story is. It has not been banned as of yet.
The quarantine part that he might have confused, the quarantine was due to a Mexican fruit fly on fruit in Valley Center.
Yeah. Yeah. Does that answer your question, Bob?
Yeah, but on the milkweed, can you see that, whatever you call it, disease?
No. No, it's a bacteria. It's obviously very small. So, yeah, you cannot see it with the naked eye.
Yeah, and there's no spray for that because it's better to spray than you know, maybe cut down a whole plant.
Well, the plant will come back without any problem. So it's easier just to cut it back.
Right.
And there's really nothing you can spray that's going to take care of it. Plus, if you start spraying stuff, then you might have other issues. With interaction with the caterpillars or the butterflies. So it's better just to cut it back in October or November.
Okay, well, thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Have a great weekend.
Hey, goodbye.
Bye. It'll be interesting to see what happens.
Some of the butterfly societies that you and I have read about, they speak to making sure if you're going to have tropical milkweed in our type of climate, to just cut it back by Thanksgiving.
Right.
Yeah.
Get rid of it by Thanksgiving and let it come back in the spring.
Yeah, right. Some of the most interesting information on it was articles that were published by the Texas Butterfly Ranch and their entomologist who had studied monarchs for many, many years. That was one of the things that they pointed out in the article that I read, which came out a year ago, so it's fairly contemporary. Was if you move the border 100 miles south, then it's a native milkweed.
Right.
Right.
So, you know, it is what it is.
So, exactly.
So, let's see. We're going to go up to Escondido where Doc is waiting. Good morning, Doc. How are you?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good. What can we do for you?
Well, back in 79-80 when I came out here, I brought with me a bottle of probably, I'm going to say, 50% chlordane, which I think I still have somewhere in a cloth. And it was for the fire ants.
Chlordane,
one of the things that would kill them. Don't know what to do with it. I haven't used it in quite a few years. I think I used some of it a little bit in 80, but it was like takes a teaspoon for a gallon of water or something, you know. But I just didn't know if it's illegal out here, and if is it any good? Would you want it?
No,
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 no, no, thank you,
no, thank you. Yeah. We do not want it. I believe. Take well, chlordane the... has been banned in California. It's been banned for some time now. At least 20 years, I would say, if not longer. But if you have some left over in your garage and you don't know what to do with it, I would, if you're in Escondido, check with the city of Escondido and see if they have a chemical recycling program.
Hazardous waste disposal days would be a good time to
get
rid
of it.
Well,
the city has one at, I believe, at the Miramar land. The city of San Diego has one at the Miramar landfill, but I believe you have to be a city of San Diego resident.
And you have to make an appointment to bring chemicals.
Yeah, but check with the city of Escondido and see if they have a home hazmat recycling program. And if they do, they should take care of it for you without any trouble.
Obviously, I did not use my real name because the last thing I wanted to do was have a $40 charge closing a chlordane.
So. No, I hear you.
No, I understand. But yeah, that's where I would look is check with the city of Escondido with the hazmat recycling program and see if they have one there and go from there.
Thanks, guys.
You're welcome. Good luck.
Bye.
Have a good weekend.
Probably a lot of people out there that have shell, you know.
Yeah.
That have old chemicals.
And that is, they regularly have hazardous waste disposal drives or whatever, and that would be a good time to get rid of that and any other old pesticide you may have laying around.
There are a number of sites in Escondido to do it.
Well, I think they also take paint and stuff like that.
They do.
Well.
They don't take nuclear waste, though. Just so if you happen to have plutonium or something, they're not going to take that. But they do take a lot of auto fluids, paints, et cetera, cleaners, oils, et cetera.
Thank goodness we have that mountain in Nevada.
Yucca Mountain.
Yeah, to take care of that.
Well, you know, speaking of paint, what you can do now, and I haven't tried it yet, but I've seen it at Home Depot. They've packets of a desiccant. You open it up and pour it into the paint and mix it up, and it within minutes, it solidifies the paint.
I thought all I had to do was take it home, open it, use it once, and put it away, and then it would solidify.
Exactly. Well, it eventually will, but especially if you leave the lid off of it. But if you don't leave the lid off of it, then it sits there for a long time. But I thought that was very interesting because you can throw away, as far as I know, at least it used to be, that you could throw away dried paint, but you can't throw away liquid paint. So I believe that's what
I did not know that.
I did not know that.
That's
either.
What brought about the packets of stuff that you mix with your paint, and it dries your paint out.
Makes sense. But
I'm surprised because I thought it was very easy to dry paint, but I guess maybe it's not.
A big gallon or a five gallon bucket of paint,
it's going to take a while for it to dry out.
I don't have any 5 gallon buckets of paint.
Oh, I do.
Okay. I hear you can get some desiccant.
Yeah,
put it in there
to
dry it out.
Yeah. If you want to give us a call today, 888-344-1170 is the number. We've got a new plant going to be available in both stores today.
Today?
Correct?
Today.
What's that?
Thai Constellation Monsteras. It's a variegated monstera.
It's more speckled.
Okay.
And variegated.
Than the regular variegated ones, which are insanely expensive. These are expensive, but not.
It's also one of the most sought after indoor plants right now.
Yeah. I think it hit the market a couple of years ago because I remember I tracked down a grower in Florida to try to get some for us before it was before the pandemic.
Okay.
Because it was before all the
prices went through the roof.
People going crazy over
stuff.
But they wouldn't sell them to us. So we have since found a grower that will sell them, and so we do have them available. Are they in 4-inch pots or
they're in 4-inch. They came in 6-inch pots. We potted them down because they are susceptible to root rot.
Oh,
so we want to make sure we lightened their soil and put them into smaller pots.
Gotcha.
This particular species or cultivar came from a single tissue culture from a lab in Thailand, hence the name Thai. But it came from Thailand in a laboratory.
Interesting. Yeah. It's a really pretty plant. I mean,
too bad they didn't just leak it out of that laboratory that we could all have it for free.
Have our own. It's a good looking plant.
Yeah. No,
for a house plant.
I agree.
But it's another one of those plants that a few years ago were like the albo, the white variegated one that was common. It was hard to get, but it was regularly available. For $20, $30, $40, it was something normal. And now it's hundreds of dollars per stem section.
Yeah.
Popularity, supply and demand.
I've heard something about that.
Houseplants have become the new tulip.
It's crazy.
They really have. Yeah. The amount of money that people are charging for some things is...
Yeah.
It's crazy.
But it really is.
But that's what the market is. But
it
you said
seems to be deflating.
I was
going to
say
bit,
you,
which is
you,
good.
You had mentioned that you have seen people selling their collections of houseplants.
The good news
is still there.
This craziness in houseplants has brought a lot of new people
into the
to the plant business, into the nurseries, into growing things, which is great. The bad thing is it's inflated the prices of it. It's been part of it preceded most of the inflation that we're seeing now. But it seems to be deflating a little bit. And hopefully some of that money will go back into precious metals like gold and silver and drive up those prices for me and come out of the other things. Yes.
So anyway, if you're looking to add a Thai Constellation Monstera to your collection, both stores will have them available.
A few. Limited numbers.
Yeah, not a lot. But we will have some available starting today. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back with more right after this.
Get your gardening questions answered by calling 888-344-1170. That's 888-344-1170. There is more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Got a gardening question? Call 888-344-1170. 888-344-1170. Now, here's your hosts, Ken Anderson, David Ross, Mark Mahady, and George Allman.
You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with David Ross, Mark Mahady, and George Allman. We're going to go to the phones real quick over to San Diego where Bruce is waiting. Good morning, Bruce. How are you? Bruce, you there?
Did you properly click the button?
I did.
Well, while we're waiting for Bruce, did you see the exciting breaking non-nursery plant news?
What?
There's going to be a sequel coming out to A Christmas Story.
Bruce, are you there?
Please, Bruce.
I'm with Ken.
Bruce, if you're listening, give us a call back. We would love to talk to you. I did see that only, 40 years later?
Yeah. I really enjoy that movie, so I hope they can do a decent job with it.
Yeah, it's one of my favorites, too.
I think you brought that up because I told you yesterday I didn't care for that movie.
Well, I partially because of... No, but because it was on the TV behind me. And just for those of you who do not know, the late Princess Diana's chief of staff looks like a young Henry Kissinger. And for this and other timely tips, did Bruce call back?
Yeah, it looks like Bruce is back. Let me... Bruce, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Oh, okay. Great. What can we do for you?
Yeah, I got a question about tomatoes. Is it still, or is it too late to plant celebrity tomatoes to get another crop?
No, you should be able to get another crop by late October.
Yeah,
or so.
Yeah. I wouldn't do it from seed at this point.
No,
but from starts I would.
Yeah, celebrity right. Early girl's another good one that'll give you a pretty quick turnaround on a crop.
And what would you think about using duck water for fertilizer?
I don't know what you know, that
I think,
is.
I think our gentleman at the up in Poway who's teaching today uses duck water for most of his fertilization for his fruit trees and such. He's very positive about it, so I would think it would work.
And duck water meaning pond?
Pond water that you have ducks
have
in.
Ducks yeah. in.
Oh. Okay, I would suggest right. that you do right. a very good job of keeping that water off of the tomatoes, and right. I'd wash them well before ingesting them. But I think what's in right. the duck water would be good for the soil, not good for you.
Correct.
Right.
How was that?
Okay, and then other than that, it'd be good to just use Grow Power then, correct?
Oh, Grow Power is awesome.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, Grow Power is great.
Okay. Well, great. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. You're Thanks welcome. For the call.
Have a good weekend.
Thanks. You too. Take care. Let's see. We're going to go out to Spring Valley where Reagan is waiting. Good morning, Reagan. How are you?
Fine. How are you this morning?
Doing well. What can we do for you?
Well, I ran across this system to get rid of fire ants in the past. You use clubs and pour it in the anthill, and it suffocates them when it gets down in the ground.
Your phone's breaking up. But what was it you suggested?
Club
you
soda.
Use club soda. Pour it into the anthill, and it suffocates them. Which I could kind of see how that might work, because of the carbon dioxide that's in the soda, and it's going to off gas, and it's going to be heavier and stay down in there.
But I don't think it's going to get through all the tunnels, will
yeah,
it?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how much you'd have to pour down there. In theory, it sounds like it would work.
You know what I've seen work really well
before?
Is the little taro ant stations where they come and take it back to the
nest.
I've seen some tests recently done with that, and the ants are attracted to it. And if you look at it in the short term, people complain, oh, the ants love it, and they're just attracted to it. But then two or three days later, the ants are gone, and they don't come back.
We had to use those traps inside recently, not for fire ants, but they're very effective.
Yeah, where did you come across that? I'd be curious to do some more research on it. That's a new one on me. But like I said, in theory, it makes sense.
I don't recall where I heard it was on a radio show, I believe. And another thing, if I get ants in the house, is my heat gun. It puts out 700 degrees of heat and just turns them into little balls of ants, and it vaporizes their trail.
Oh, that's
and they don't come back.
Interesting. That's another one that I had not heard of before.
Nor have I.
Do we need to issue a disclaimer or be careful using heat guns like that inside during summer and around things that might combust?
Around flammable
things. Yes.
So. Yeah, I occasionally will melt a plastic bag. But,
well,
it's non-toxic and it's quick.
I would imagine
that
so.
That is true.
That is true. Reagan, thank you very much for the call. Have a great weekend. We're going to move on to Kathy in San Diego, who's got a fern question. Good morning, Kathy. How are you?
I'm well. And yourself?
Doing well. Thank you. What can we do for you?
I have a bunch of lace ferns. And microbe. This year, I don't know what happened, but all of the leaves are getting, they're starting to get like they almost look like they're molted or, you know, like fine specks of, you know, I don't know, white stuff on them, but it's not on them. It's in the leaves. And then the leaves just die after that. They're just sickly. I don't know what it is that's killing everything.
How about the potential of an insect? Something like a thrip.
Be stronger.
A thrip.
Okay.
Potentially. But what I might suggest is cut off a leaf. Take a piece of printer paper on your table and tap it vigorously on that paper and see if you see anything moving around.
Thrips will cause that on ferns. It'll discolor them. Usually it'll turn them a silver or a white, and sometimes you'll see little black specks on there as well. But thrips and spider mites will both discolor ferns, including the lace fern.
Okay, so if it is thrips, what do I do about it?
I would spray them. I would use on a fern, Bayer Rose and Flower. I'm sorry, Bioadvanced Rose and Flower.
Or eight.
No, that's not a spray, though.
Yeah, it is.
Oh, the or trigger eight. Sprayer. Okay.
Yeah, there are a number of products that you can use that will take care of both the spider mites and the thrips. Just pop into one of the locations and someone will help
it's,
you out.
If it's spider mites, she has to get insect different. Mite and disease.
Yes.
The bottle right next to it.
Okay, so I know what spider mites are, but I guess I've never dealt with thrips before. I'll just talk to someone at the store that'll tell me which is the best product.
Yeah, and bring in
actually,
a
if you're going to go in, bring in the sample, bring a sample of the leaf. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Quick second question or no?
Sure. Go ahead.
Okay, so I have another fern because I'm a big fern person, and the other fern is a silver lady.
Yeah,
I don't know all the technicals. So I've had a couple of these before, and they've died in the past, and I'm just not sure that they just. I don't know if it's root rot. They do fine, and all of a sudden it's like a sudden death. The leaves are green, and then all of a sudden, the whole plant just dies. And I don't know, again, if it's root rot. I doubt it because everything's in pots so that it's allowed to drain out. Are they susceptible to any particular kind of disease?
Not that I'm aware of. Typically, it's a water issue, but how often do you say that they're in pots. How often do you water them?
Yes. Well, I always stick my finger in to see if, you know, it's dry, and I water it at that point. Like, I don't let them get overly dry. I'm, you know, once a week, maybe, I think, during the summer.
I would suggest to you that once in a while you let it go a little bit longer than it needs to. And had you watered it the day before or the day before that, it'd probably still be alive. In a container, they're going to be very thirsty. As long as you're using a good medium that drains well, they're going to dry out very quickly, and it'd be hard to overwater them in a container as long as it's draining freely.
Correct.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I guess it's so you think it's primarily a water issue? You think that's probably the reason?
Typically, yes.
There's no signs of disease.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Typically,
it's
water.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call, Kathy. Right. Have a great weekend. You've been listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. We'll be back next week with another hour of Garden Talk. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Thanks for joining us on Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery, your source for gardening, landscaping, and horticulture news. Still have a question for the Garden Talk crew or want to learn more about the show, how to become a guest or sponsor? Send an email to askanexpert@walteranderson.com. That's askanexpert@walteranderson.com or visit walteranderson.com. There's more professional gardening advice next week at this same time on Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery.
This program is sponsored by Walter Anderson Nursery.